You're listening to The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast with your hosts, Chet West and Bill Patterson. Here's what's on deck for this episode.
We knew that the bad days were going to probably hit us. And they have.
Chet, it doesn't matter. They're big leaguers. They should have the advantage at home over. Yes.
There's a story there. I think he could end up taking a starting spot.
Talk about Detroit's very own Ballpark Franks. Litter Box, listeners of your Detroit Tigers. It is your host, Billy P. and Chet West. And we're coming at you with a six-game recap, and we're going to talk a little bit about our Motown Kitties. They're currently at 66-50.
They are six games up on your Cleveland Guardians, which we will get to in a moment. But let's recap really quickly what happened recently. Last Friday, they lost 5-4 to the Phillies. The bullpen was just bad. If there was anything good, it was Torres's three RBIs. Moving forward to Saturday, the Tigers won 7-5. Tarek Skubal was again good, so was Colt Keith. Will Vest was awful. Let's move to Sunday Night Baseball. On ESPN, the Phillies took that 2-0. Charlie Morton, he was good. Jemai Jones was, I guess, the most positive of any of the bats, but overall, the bats were bad. Let's go to Monday's game. The Tigers won 6-3 back at home at Comerica. Carp hit a bomb that was awesome, and Kyle Finnegan showed why he was a Tigers free agent wannabe and definitely a trade deadline acquisition. The other thing is that Melton was pretty good. After that, I would say two of the worst games the Tigers have played have been the most recent two, which would have been Tuesday and today. They lost 6-3 to the Twins, and it was just bad. Paddock was bad. Montero was bad yesterday. And then today, 9-4 Twins win, and Flaherty was bad. It just didn't go good. He had 5 earned runs and only 4.2 innings. And I guess outside of Carp and Torque kind of upholding the offense, we're looking at a team that's really hitting a skid. And if you go, you know, last 10 games, last 20 games, last 30 games, you're going to see a bar chart or XY going in the wrong direction, which is basically falling off a cliff. Chet, what say you?
First and foremost, we saw this coming. Not to sit here and act like a Nostradamus 1-2 here, but we knew this was going to happen. It was just a matter of time. We knew they were playing above themselves. We knew they were at the peak. We knew that the bad days were going to probably hit us. And they have. I mean, they do still have moments where they look like a capable baseball team. They're still in first place, still six games up on Cleveland as of today, as of just now. I think there are some glaring issues. You know, the Philly series, I'll start there. They were competitive in all three games, and they went up against some very good pitching in all three games.
I would say the best pitching they've gone up against
easily
all season, save maybe the second Rangers series.
I could have walked away from that series with the one win and felt really good about it. And we couldn't. We just couldn't because the Twins come to town. We get a home series against, you've got an injured animal in town and you can't take advantage of them and get on the healthy train. You got to lose 2 out of 3 and do it in a fashion that really makes everybody question where you're going to end up at the end of the season, at the end of a series like this. It sounds ridiculous. It sounds extreme, but I can't watch our new acquisition of Chris Paddock go out and get shelled in the first inning against his former team. I don't care how hard that is to pitch against your former team. I don't care how hard it is to hit against your former team. You can't go out and get shelled against your former team who just gutted their roster. I mean, you're talking about a team of, you know, you got Royce Lewis out there still, okay? He's not quite performing where they'd like him to be. You got a young guy like Brooks Lee who can do some damage. Luke Kuechel had a series to remember. He's their newest and latest, greatest being brought up this season. And, you know, the rest of the guys, I mean, nobody didn't hit today. But have you ever heard of Alan Roden, Is Ryan Jeffers ever struck fear in your heart as a hitter? How about Edward Julian, who has spent most of the last year and a half down at AAA, and Austin Martin, who has struggled, who can't seem to stop hitting against us likewise, even when he comes in as a pinch hitter? It's sad to watch. It's sad to watch Chris Paddock blow up. It's sad to watch Tommy Canley not be able to figure out the relief role for the last month and a half. We don't have answers, and we didn't get any answers at the trade deadline. And I can see why the fan base, I kind of wanted to play this like, let's be patient. We're still the game. We're still a team that got to 60 wins first. We didn't get anything. We got no value. Just like we said, there was no value to be had at the trade deadline unless you gave up a lot. We were one of those teams that decided we didn't want to give up a lot. We think our prospects are valuable. I think they're valuable. Other teams had valuable prospects. I mean, Leo DeVries is nothing to sneeze at. And the Padres just shipped him out for probably the best closer in the game and a starter. So let me wrap this up. I get disappointed when I see our bullpen blowing up to the tune of nobody can seem to get anybody out consistently. Our lineup, our best hitter, Riley Green. I mean, we could probably reserve 10 minutes in this pod just to talk about him. But he got benched against a righty yesterday. That is unheard of. Didn't play. AJ just left him on the pine. How did he respond after getting benched against the likes of Pearson Ohl yesterday, right-hander? How did he respond? He came out today and struck out 3 times, went 0 for 4. Way to go, Riley. Way to show him you're the guy. Way to show him you deserve that huge contract. No, thank you. Sorry. I don't know who we sign and we extend out of this batch because I'm not 100% sure I'm that confident in them going forward. They're not competing when the moment rises. When the occasion arises. So, yeah. Bill, you can tell I'm a little, I'm waiting for Lions season to start at this point. I can't see how we hold first place.
So, on that note, let me give a plug to our sister podcast, The Litterbox Lions. Check the new episode out tomorrow.
Excellent plug.
With that, let me answer your questions. No, I had not heard of any of those Twins hitters. And if I heard one more time from our announcing duo, which I'm sorry, without Jason Benetti, I love Dan, but he, Dickerson, not Peaches.
Peaches.
He is just not Benetti. And there's a little rigidness and awkwardness between him and everybody. Like Daniela seems not herself. Andy Dirks doesn't seem himself. And the team doesn't seem themselves. Obviously, that has nothing to do with it. But if I hear one more time, hey, they've never seen these pitchers before because they've been in AA and they've been in AAA. Chet, it doesn't matter. They're big leaguers. They should have the advantage at home over every one of these guys. And I am hot with you as well for the fact that I look at this roster currently as it's constructed, 1 through 26. And I don't think it's better than the roster that we opened the season in Los Angeles with.
We did not improve.
And I am just sitting here lamenting and rueing the days when Bo Brisky would march out in his number 4 jersey and provide an inning and 2/3 of mow down baseball. Not swing and miss, but he'd get guys out. And if I have to see Tommy Canley go out there another time and do what he's done the last 35 days, I'm about up to here, which for those of you, what I'm saying is I'm at Shaq O'Neal height, 7'6", I'm fed up.
7'6" of fed up.
It's
So let's take a breath.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna flip this around a little bit, kind of like you did last week. They still are up 6 games in the division. They still have many of the same players that won those 60 games to start the season, kind of jumped out and surprised everybody. Are we saying they can't do it? No, not at all. I have no doubt in my mind that they can circle the wagons and get this thing to the postseason. I think one of the things that is frustrating, at what point do you decide to start competing? When do you decide to at least make one move to add a competitive piece? I mean, Paddock is what Paddock's been all season. I watched him pitch live earlier this year against the Cubs when they were in town, and he got shelled. It was like a home run derby out there. Then when I found out we signed him and his 3-8 record or whatever it was when he came over to us, I wasn't excited. I said, gosh, this is filler. They signed a lot of filler. Hanifee got sent down. I don't know if you saw that or not. Chase Lee, which should have happened. That should have happened. Okay.
Hanifee, I disagree with Lee.
Hanifee was struggling a lot.
And the guys up aren't.
Well, I was just about to say, Hanifee got sent down. You could probably pick from half a dozen guys at least that could get sent down in that bullpen right now.
Everybody save Will Vest. And right now,
Holton looks horrible all of a sudden. What happened to Holton?
Overutilization. And
he's just overutilized?
I think that's part of it. I mean, I also think that this is the third time, you know, they're facing the Twins. And in terms of a series, and I mean, I think the cat's out of the bag. You can use a guy for an inning every series, or maybe use a guy an inning and a half, three innings tops. When you're pitching 9 to 12 innings, the third time you've seen a team, they've seen you. They know everything you have. And we just don't have guys that can get swing and miss. My guy,
what's really interesting about this series is how our starting pitching put us in a hole so early. I'm looking across at each one of these games, and our starting pitching really failed us.
Absolutely.
In most of these games, between Paddock and Flaherty, they gave up 3 or 4 runs each to start the game off in the first inning or two. You can't do that and expect to have good outcomes. That's not going to happen. I sit here and I look at, like, you know, Paddock, 3 runs in the first inning yesterday. Really? Against that lineup? Come on now.
I think you're being, I don't want to say hard on him per se. I'm more disappointed in Flaherty because I thought today would be for your number 2 starter, what they're paying him, whether we want to argue whether he's a number 2 starter or not. We've done that all season. He's not. Yeah. He's a 4 or 5.
Yeah.
The fact is, today was the day to put a stop in it. It's a getaway game, so it's a midday game. Comerica drew well. The weather looked nice. It wasn't too hot. It wasn't too hazy. The Canadian wildfire smoke has been, you know, penetrating Michigan and all that. I'm not making excuses, but I'm just trying to paint the picture for those that didn't watch. It was a glorious day in downtown Detroit, and Jack Flaherty just didn't have it yet again. And where I'm getting concerned is the same front office that traded Jack Flaherty, then re-signed Jack Flaherty, then just, I mean, fortunately, they didn't decimate the farm system, but brought in a lot of dumpster dive in the way of pitching both relief and starters. I'm dubious at best. Let's just say that.
I tell you what, though, I enjoyed watching Troy Melton pitch yesterday for 2 innings.
Yes.
There's a story there. I think he could end up taking a starting spot from somebody.
But the
problem
is,
he's pitched his last couple times out.
They just picked up Morton so they could move him to the bullpen.
That won't last.
Okay, we'll see.
You and I both know that's not going to last.
Let's see. So I guess the good news going forward is a lot of teams below 500 upcoming. The Tigers still have 3 games against your Anaheim Angels of Los Angeles, or whatever they're calling themselves, who surprisingly were buyers at the deadline, even though they are well below 500 at 55-59 going into Friday's game. We do have Scooble on the mound, so that might be nice to, you know, get a win in game 1 and then kind of proceed from there. You've got Morton game 2, and then you've got Mize game 3. And then what I think is going to be interesting is the Tigers then travel to Chicago to play not the Cubs, but the White Sox, who have been playing better baseball, but still are the worst team in the American League. And then from there, they go to Minnesota to face the Twins again, come back home to face the Astros. So basically, they've got 3 series against teams that are...
They had nine games in a row against scuffling teams.
Yeah. And I think it's all there ahead of them. After that, it gets even better for the fact that it's Royals, Athletics, Royals.
Yeah.
And after that, they don't have to go west again. That is as far west as they're traveling for the rest of the season. To Sacramento to play whatever you want to call the Athletics, Vegas, Oakland, whatever. And then to Kansas City, Kauffman and then come back. To your point on the trade deadline, if I can just circle back on it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I do think Oakland was the biggest, or whatever, Sacramento, Las Vegas, the biggest winners. I also think that San Diego won by getting Mason Miller and other returns there. Oakland's in a where, or the Athletics are in a very different position than the Tigers are, for the fact that they're in the bottom of their division by a long shot. They have a good crew of young hitters upcoming, add to it. They got a, let's not say bona fide, because we never know with prospects, but they got one of the top three prospects in baseball. And things look really, really bright for them on the deal. But the fact is, I think the Padres look really good as well. And if I had to judge it overall, I wish the Tigers had been more aggressive.
Yeah, I was a bit. I don't want to give away the farm. We talked about that. We didn't want them to give away the farm.
Not Padres aggressive, but
they didn't get anything.
Anybody.
Now, maybe that's
Finnegan.
Just because
Finnegan. I think that's the one thing
Ronzo
they got.
Is invaluable enough to get. And Finnegan's been great so far. He's converted both his save efforts. So hats off to that one signing that we said was the only signing that would probably make
it. Yeah, that we were excited about. So again, I think, you know, August is going to tell us everything. But if for whatever reason, Chet, the Tigers are neck and neck with the Guardians at the end of this month, I'm saying right now, put up the red flags, push panic buttons. This team will not make the playoffs.
I just don't see them circling the wagons. After they lose this lead, I don't see them circling the wagons. They need to stay out there as far as they can. They need to win every game against beatable teams. I mean, I just, you know, you play the Twins again, you need to get 2 out of 3 at least. You're going to go play the Angels, you need to get 2 out of 3 from the Angels.
Got to start winning season.
Got to start winning series again.
Yeah.
And they haven't done that in a while.
No. So I think we're aligned in that. I think we're both aligned in the fact that we're glad that top prospects were held on to. I still think they could have dipped into the back end of the top 10, maybe 11 through 12. I know technically in some, you know, circles they traded 13 or 14. But here's the fact. They needed to do more. And it's, and I'm looking at this team and I feel like they don't seem like the same group, because they're not. They're different individuals than they were, you know, that won the first 60 games. And it's interesting that they were the first team to 60. If they get to 90, I bet they'll be the last team to.
It's possible. It's very possible. And I, you know, what scares me is I think our division, if they allow the Indians to creep back in, KC is going to keep surging too, probably. Our division becomes very competitive all of a sudden. And I'm not sure they can hold up. That pitching staff's not going to hold up against two surging teams. I mean, it's about ebb and flow, right? So if we're ebbing when they're flowing, we got a problem. And so I'll be curious to see if they can circle the wagons earlier rather than later, because it may be too late by the time they do. They could go from first to third and out of the playoffs real fast. I hate to say it, though. It sounds drastic. But the way they've been playing for the last month, I mean, we kind of said, if you're going to have a bad run, have it right after the All-Star break. But this bad run's gone on for a while, it seems. And some of this is ugly. It's not like they're winning that many games close. I mean, it was great. Like I said, Philly series made me feel a little bit better. Even though we lost two, we were close. Twin series? I'm looking at that going, what happened?
Yeah.
How do we just go flat like that out of nowhere?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I felt good after the Phillies.
As a fan, you say you're screaming your head off. You try to stay level-headed, but.
All right. On another note, since we don't have a way ballpark food to talk about, I thought I'd talk about Detroit's very own ballpark Franks, which.
Best part of the segment of the day is coming up right here.
And
if you wanted to not hear us cry, just fast forward to this. 20 minutes in.
So I always wondered what the association with Ballpark Franks and the Tigers was. And so I did a little Google dive today and found out that it is Detroit's like very own, and they were the one to kick it off. And so basically, Ballpark Frank is the most consumed hot dog in the United States of America, with over 91 million consumed in 2020. By 2020. In
2020?
Yes. In 2024, they were the leading seller of retailer, which means refrigerated Frankfurters, with U.S. sales of 222 and change million. And Oscar Mayer, who we associate with being kind of a Goliath in the hot dog market, was almost 100 million behind with 136 million. So originally it was Tyson Foods. Sara Lee bought them. The history is this. In 1957, High-Grade Food Products, a Detroit-based meatpacking company owned by the Slotkin family, under the direction of Hugo Slotkin, the, you know, CEO of it, acquired the exclusive contract to supply hot dogs at Detroit's Briggs Stadium, which became Tiger Stadium. In response, their sausage maker decided to do a specific formula that incorporated veal in a much finer emulsion, meaning the grinding of the beef, pork, veal products, which created a larger 1/8 of 1 pound hot dog in contrast to the park's previous 1/10 of 1 pound offerings. The product's popularity soared, and in 1959, 1 year later, it officially became known as the Ballpark Frank. It kept building. In 1965, the company's tagline took on, "They plump when you cook them." Why? The veal in it. And that was developed by the WB Donor Agency, think Mad Men, Detroit style.
Sure.
Then the product was launched nationally, and it became the biggest hot dog, obviously, you know, citing the statistics that I'm stating, that we've seen. Interestingly enough, in 1985, a Cincinnati school teacher by the name of Bob Wood decided to visit every major league ballpark one summer, and he rated the ballparks on one condition. Do you know what condition that was, Chet?
The level of hot dog that they're
serving. Yeah. His 1989 book, Dodger Dogs to Fenway Franks and All the Wieners in Between.
Oh, wow.
Guess what he ranked number one?
Detroit.
A ballpark Frank with a little mustard served on the stick is a dream fulfilled.
Served on the stick. Okay.
No, remember they used to take the tongue dispensers like at the old school doctor's office, and the vendors had a big vat of mustard from your steamed wiener.
Dip it,
And then they'd slap it on. And he said it's a dream fulfilled and proof that worthy experiences never die in the tradition of a fine baseball park.
I find it fascinating that they plumped because they had veal in them. Does veal have a plumping agent in it that causes some sort of massive girth to the dog?
I am not a food scientist. I'm just going off of what Google said. I think it's the veal and the emulsion. I think there's also something else that's added.
I'm wondering if men will start getting veal injections after listening to our podcast.
Definitely.
I think that's on probably.
Yeah, I think you and I are scheduled.
Start the advertising for that.
Yeah, you and I are scheduled for early October.
I want to throw something at you. So now that we do these food things.
For veal injections, of course.
Veal injections.
I'm going to get my lips done first, right? So I can look like everybody on Love Island.
Exactly. So now that we do these food things, I constantly get texts, Instagram messages, all sorts of things from various listeners when they're at the ballpark and they're eating a dog. I got one this past week from my friend Glenn Fettick. He is out in Seattle. He's out at Safeco this past weekend, and he sent me a picture of their sumo dog.
Mm.
Their signature style hot dogs. I just want to read a few of these things to you here. Okay. Sumo dog runs $14.50. There's a Mariner dog. That's kind of a no-frills, just a great dog. That's exactly how they describe it. That's at $9. The no-frills, just a great dog is probably the one I'm ordering 9 times out of 10. They have a sumo chili and cheese and a Godzilla dog, the Godzilla, they call it. These are all $15, $16 hot dogs. You can get sides of chili and cheese, some miso mustard coleslaw, in case you ever wanted to have any of that.
Sounds delicious. What makes a sumo dog a sumo dog? Is it bigger?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, but at the bottom it says it's Japanese inspired. Then they have the pictures of it, and it just says happiness is a warm bun. And the sumo dog appears to have seaweed on there, shredded seaweed.
Nori.
Yeah. Nori, as one would call it. All sorts of just junk on this dog. Now, I'm betting it tastes wonderful. Don't get me wrong.
What did he say?
I'm sure it's... What did he pay?
No, what did he say? Did he love it?
Here's his review. I'm going to give it to you. It was lovely. Soft bun, good toppings, delish. Glenn, if you're going to do this, I need more. I need a video of you eating it. I need to see it spilling down the front of you. I need a little more out of you than that.
I said, did you have
the Godzilla? He says, sumo chili cheese. Very good.
Well, he skipped the miso mustard.
He skipped the, I don't think he went for the miso mustard coleslaw. But what I see when I see this menu is you can have lunch for $40 at Safeco, apparently. That's a beer is $16 for a premium draft beer, and a dog is $16. And if you throw the coleslaw in there, you're at about $40 with tax, probably. So you want a mochi? That's $4 for a little mochi puck. That's insane. I hope the dogs were good. I would have just had the regular old Mariner dog, personally. I think that's where I would have gone. The rest of it looks like a mess. I don't know that I want nori on my hot dog. A little exotic for me. But thanks, Glenn, for shooting these pictures over and giving us your experience here. And I hope you had a good time at Safeco. But that was, you know, we get these people writing and sending us food stuff. Yeah, I'm fascinated by most of it, but I need videos of you housing these dogs and making a slob of yourself.
And if any listeners know why the ballpark Frank plumps, please let us know, because that would be good to know.
I thought you just said it's the veal.
According to the website, but we don't know that. I mean, I'm sure it's an additive.
It's an additive. It's veal additive. I start putting it on all my foods.
Does veal plump when you bake it?
Does it make you plump in the right way? I don't know. Anyhow, I don't want to plump, like, you know, I'm already plump in some places. Like, well, more plump elsewhere, not everywhere.
With that, Tiger fans, let's hope that we have a really, really strong series against the Angels. We will be back with you series by series going forward. And please tune in to our sister pod, the Detroit Lions Litter Box, which will be released before this Friday's game against the Atlanta Falcons.
We got real creative with the name of it. Litter Box, a Detroit Lions podcast. It might sound like another podcast you know and love, Litterbox, Detroit Tigers podcast. We just swapped out the Lions and the Tigers.
Gotta build the brand.
All right. Have a good one, folks. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the Litterbox, a Detroit Tigers podcast. Thanks for hanging out with us. We're Bill and Chet. We'll be back soon with more Tigers talk. If you're enjoying the show, be sure to follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, if you got a minute, leave us a quick review. Till next time, go Tigers!